Balat Ov. And today we're going to look at the only other biblical woman.
2 weeks ago.
Oh, that's right. We did it 2 weeks ago. You're right. 2 weeks ago, we did the Megadeth in the middle because it was the Parsha. I couldn't not do it. But today we're going to look at the only other biblical woman who actually is called a witch. We don't see her doing any witchcraft, but she gets the title witch, and you'll see in a minute. So the personality that we're going to look at today is Izebel. And Izebel is really a personality. If you want to back somebody who wears the pants in the family, we're going to see that she is really the character that does it. Now, she appears in a number of different verses. So we're going to look at all of those different verses where she appears. So let's start in source number one. There is another source sheet if you need one. Okay, Melachim Aleph Perek Tet Zayin begins. Vayas Achav ben Amri Hara b'nei Hashem mikol asher lefanav. So we are talking about King Achav. We're talking about approximately 800, 850 BCE. Okay, that's the time period. And the Pasuk tells us that Achav is a very bad man. Vahaya hanakel lechto b'chatot Yeravam ben Nevat. He continued in all of the sins of Yeravam ben Nevat. Vayikach isha et Izebel bat et Baal melech Tzidonim. Vayelech vayavod et ha-Baal vayishtachu lo. And as after we introduced his evil ways, it's being described, one of his evil deeds is actually marrying Izebel, who is the daughter of the king of Sidon, whose name is Et-Baal. Now, first of all, by the fact that we mention her father's name indicates that he is an important man. Okay, this is a man who we're supposed to recognize his name. That's yafe. And right away from his name, Et Baal, we know that it contains, it's like, you know, you want, people today want to give God's name into their names. This is Shir El and Hodeya and all of those names which we put in, you put in God's name. So here they're putting God's name into it. His name is Et Baal. And he is the king of Sidon. Now, why do you think Achav marries Izebel? It's a neighboring country. We know other kings that have done this as well, Shlomo being one of them, that the reason you marry the daughter of a nearby king is in order to solidify the breach between these two nations. And Achav had gone to war against the Assyrians. Achav wins a spectacular victory with the help of the Tzidonim. It's only the only times that the Assyrian army was beaten, and therefore it is a solidify this relationship between the two nations. He marries Izebel. Now, let's talk about her name for a minute. Many of us living in modern day Hebrew associate Izebel with Zevel, which means garbage. But that is a very modern Hebrew. That's a very modern Hebrew term. But she didn't realize people did that. It is a very modern Hebrew term. Izebel is not from Zevel, from garbage, but rather from names like Zvulun or Zvul Beitifartenu. That's the root of the word, which means official, high, ram, v'nisa. It has that kind of connotation. And the connotation of garbage is a much later one. Okay, so that...
Is that like a euphemism?
Yeah, I guess it's some sort of thing that came up like that, but that is understand where it comes from. Now, just if you take a quick peek in source numbers... Zvul means high, lifted up, important.
Izebel is not high.
But that's where it comes from. Now, if you just take a quick peek in source number 6... In source number 6, now the numbers come after the source, is a quote from the Esther Rabbah. Esther Rabbah says, Arba nashim natnu memshala be'olam. There were four women who actually were the ones who had reigns. The Eluhain, and these are them, Izebel and Atalia, and Atalia will do next week, Bezrat Hashem, Mi Yisrael, Vishimrimit, Vavashti Me'umot HaOlam. Shimarmit is the wife of Nebuchadnezzar, and Vashti is one you all know. So it's interesting because we look at Vashti, especially in the Megillah, we spoke about this here together, she's not just a secondary figure, she's actually somebody who had authority in and of herself, and here we're going to see that Izebel also has a certain amount of authority that she takes within herself. Okay, so she is married to Ahab, king of the northern kingdom. He is the kingdom of Melech Yisrael. And when Izebel comes from Sidon, with the background that she has, she brings with her her philosophy. Not only her religious philosophy, but also her philosophy of how to reign. And that's what we see here in Pasuk Lamed Bet, back to source 1. Vayakam mizbeach labaal beit habaal asher bana bishomron. And they establish a whole cult of worship to the Baal. Vayas Achav et ha'asherah, and Achav continues with other forms of idol worship. Vayosev Achav lahachis. And with this influence of Izebel, Ahav continues to aggravate God in a way that no other king before him has. And the pasuk ends, the chapter ends, Bayam of Banachiel at Beit Eli at Yerucha, Ba'aviram, Becharo, Yasda, Ube Sigurv, Tsa'aro, Heitziv, Delateha, Kedvar Hashem, Ashidiber, Biyad Yoshua Benun. We don't need to go into that as well. But the next thing that happens, the next couple of psukim, remember, the next couple of prakim, is Eliyahu declares a famine in order to get people to return to God. His plan doesn't work. And God says to Eliyahu, famine's over. And he has to appear to Ahav. This appears already in source number 2. And then the chapter gives us a little bit of background. Vayihi, Pasuk Dalet, I only put the Pasukim that are relevant to us. Vayihi b'chris Izebel et Nevi'ei Hashem. Vayikach Ovadja Me'a Nevi'im, Vayichbe'em 50 Ish B'marah V'Kalkalem Lechem V'mayim. Now the parak there tells us that Ovadja, who is the right-hand man of Ahav, actually at this time is going against Izebel, and he's hiding 100 prophets, 50 in this cave, 50 in that cave, either because A, the cave might have not been big enough, or because you don't want to put all your eggs in one basket. But the point here that we need to look at is not only is Izebel setting up the worship to the Baal, and the same time she has to get rid of anything that seems to be counter to what she wants to accomplish. Now, we're very used to seeing the Navi as being a separate entity to the king. And we're used to seeing Nevi'im saying very harsh things to the king because they are not in the employ of the king. Already we see that one of Izebel's major philosophical approaches is that the Nevi'im are in her payroll, one that supports them, and anybody who doesn't want to follow along, she has to get rid of. Now remember, this is a famine, and the fact that Ovadja is able to feed 100 prophets is really something that is an unusual idea. Remember, we spoke about his wife, by the way, on Hanukkah with the oil? That was Ovadja's wife, remember. Okay, Pasuk, let's skip down a couple of Psukim, where Eliyahu appears to Ovadja, and Eliyahu says to Ovadja, go tell Ahav. And Ovadja says, what are you doing to me? Halo hu gad la Adoni. Didn't anybody tell Eliyahu? Et asher asiti baharog Izebel and Nevi Hashem? Didn't anybody tell you how I'm risking my life to protect these Nevi'im? Vechbei Nevi'ei Hashem mea ish, 50 ish b'marav ha'chalkalim lechem v'mayim. He says, you know, I'm a good guy. Why are you asking me to do something so dangerous? And finally, when it's time to have this idea, this head that they're doing at Har HaKarmel, Eliyahu says, Vata, Shalach Kavot Elai et Kol Yisrael El Har HaKarmel. Go bring everybody to Har HaKarmel, that Nevi'ei HaBaal Arba'a Me'ot V'chamishim, Nevi'ei HaAshera Arba'a Me'ot Ochlei Shulchan Izevel. There are 450 in her employ, and what kind of impression do you get when they're called Ochlei Shulchan Izevel? Not only are they on her payroll, but she is feeding them, they hang out with her, it seems to be almost as if she's part of that group, but we see that they certainly answer to her. Pardon? Right. So there are Nevi'im. The Gemara actually tells us there were actually more than double the Jews who left Egypt. That's how many prophets there were. Okay? Which brings us over to a million, at one point, whatever it is. We only know about 48 men and 7 women because only those Nevuot that were necessary for future generations were written down. And all those other prophets, we don't know what their prophecies were. But we know, remember, we have Shaul falling a time with the Nevi'im, we have the B'nei HaNevi'im with Elisha, so there were these groups who had Nevu'ah. So then we have that whole miracle that appears on Har HaKarmel, all the Jews say Hashem, Hu Elokim, Eliyahu encourages everybody to go and catch the Nevi'ei HaBaal, and there's a bloodbath, and then we begin the next perek, which is source number 3. Source number 3 is Perek Yutet. Ahav comes home from witnessing an outright miracle. There's been this, the whole nation goes out and kills these 450 Nevi'ei HaBaal. Vayaged Ahav li'Izevel et kol asher asa Eliyahu ve kol asher harag et ha-Nevi'im b'chareb. And he describes to Izevel what happened there. Vatishlach Izevel malach el Eliyahu lemor. Ko ya'asun Elohim v'cho yosifun ki ke'et machar asim et nafshecha kenefesh echad mehem. Everybody else is impressed. Everybody else is like blown away with the miracle. Izevel is not impressed. Izevel's reaction is, I'm going to kill you. Okay? Right, I'm going to get you. That is her reaction. That is against what is everybody else is looking at. So what is actually interesting here, though, is Chazal actually look at Izevel in a positive way here by the fact that if you look at, well, first of all, what does Eliyahu do as a result of this? He goes away. Where does he run to? He runs to the Midbar. He runs to the Midbar. Why, if this is Malchut Yisrael, why doesn't he just run to Malchut Yehuda? So look at source number 7. Source number 7 is the Radak, a little bit later on in the Perek, and he says, V'hu holech ba-midbar. Afilu be'eretz Yehuda lo batuach. He says he can't even run to Eretz Yehuda, ki yarei, you see it? Ki yarei shema tishlach Izevel lahargo sham. Izevel's strength is actually even beyond Malchut Yisrael. Eliyahu's afraid to go to Yehuda because Izevel can get him there. So this already begins to describe to you the power that she has. She doesn't only have power within the northern kingdom, but she has power there as well. And therefore, Eliyahu feels he needs to run out into the Midbar. But the Medrash Osho actually tells us here that there's something positive about Izevel's behavior in that she warns Eliyahu. She could have just killed him, but by the fact that she tells him, I'm going to kill you, and gives him a chance to run away, that is viewed as a positive thing. Now, before we go any further, I just want to ask a question. If this nation is so terrible, and everybody's worshiping idols, and you know the idol worship is so rampant, how is it that Ahav was able to succeed in war? So the Medrash here tells us something very interesting. In several places, it tells us that what was something unique about the generation of Ahav, and that is that they didn't speak Lashon Hara. They might have been idol worshippers, but in terms of their relationship to each other, and one proof of it is the fact, if Ovadia is hiding 100 Nevi'im, it can't be that he's the only one who knows about it. You can't hide 100 people and keep it, and feed them And nobody told Izebel. And that's one of the proofs. And so this is the idea that even though they're idol worshippers, they're not tattletellers. And that was enough for God to allow them to have victory in war. But anyway, all of that is sort of a background to the major chapter where we see Izebel in her glory, and that's chapter 21 in Melachim Aleph. Now, I apologize because when I copied it, you'll see that the psukim are sort of backwards. The English actually came out correct. So you might want to follow along in the English, and then if you understand that you need the Hebrew, you have to look it up. So let's read the chapter through, and then we'll go back and discuss what it is that's going on there. It's source number 4, and it continues on the back of page 1. Okay, it's Perek Chaf Aleph in Melachim Aleph. Vayhi achar hadvrim ha'ele, kerem hayat lenavot ha'yisraeli asher b'Yisrael. It was after these things, we meet an individual whose name is Navot, and he owns a vineyard in Emek Israel, Eitzal Hechal Achav Melech Shomron, and his vineyard is near the palace of Achav, who is the capital of Shomron, the northern kingdom. Vayidaber Achav El Navot Lemor. Achav comes to Navot and he says, Tenali et Karmecha, V'yeli Legan Yerek. Give me your vineyard so I can make it into a... Now, what is it? How do they translate? The Gan Yerek literally translates as a vegetable garden. We'll have to talk what he wants with. Ki hu karov el beiti, because it's near my house. Ve'etnat lacha tachtav kerem tov mimena. And I will give you even a better vineyard. Im tov be'necha nelacha kesef mechir zeh. And I will even give you money for it as well. Okay, seems to be a reasonable offer. This is near my house. I need it for the palace. I'll give you one instead. I'll pay you whatever. Vayomer Navot el Achav. So then Navot says to Achav, Chalila li me Hashem, God forbid, mititi et nachlat avotai lecha, that I should give my family inheritance to you. So Achav comes home, tsar v'za'ef el hadvar asher diber elav Navot ha'Yisraeli, and he comes home offended and insulted. And what was it that he remembers? Vayomer lo etein lecha et nachlat avotai. He says he told me he wouldn't give him his father's inheritance. Vayishkav al mitato. He climbs into bed. Vayisev et panav v'lo achal lechem. And he turns his head to the wall and he pulls up the covers and he's not willing to eat. Right. Vatavo elav Izebel ishto. So Izebel, his wife, comes to him. Vatidaber elav, and she says to him, Maze ruchacha sara ve'encha olechem ochelechem. Why are you so depressed? Vatidaber eleha, ki adaber al Navot ha'Yisraeli. I said to Navot ha'Yisraeli, va'omar lo, and I said to him, Tenali et karmecha bekesef o imcha feitzatat nelecha kerem tachtav. I wanted his vineyard, I offered him money, or I offered him something even better. Vayomer lo etein lecha et karmi. But he said to me, no, I'm not giving you my vineyard. Vatomer elav Izebel ishto. And Izebel says to him, Ata ta'asem lucha al Yisrael? Are you a king? Kum echol lechem, get up. V'yitav libcha, and be happy. Ani etein lecha et kerem Navot ha'Yisraeli. I got it. I'll take care of it. You just let me, don't worry about it. That's right. V'tichtov svarim b'shem Achav, and she writes letters in Achav's name. She's why we only have two women who write in the Bible, Izebel and Esther. Right, those are two women who actually says that she writes. V'tachtom b'chotmo, and she seals it with his signet ring. V'tishlach asvarim el hazakenim ve'el hachorim asher b'iro yoshvim et Navot. And she sends these letters to the leaders of his community. V'tichtov basvarim lemor, and this is what she writes in the books. Kir'utzom, say b'fast day, Toshivu and Navot Barosh Ha'am, and set up Navot to be the, you know, leader of the day of fasting. Voshivu Shnayim Anashim B'nei Belial Negdo. And then you hire two lowlives, V'yahadihu Lemar, and they should come along and say, Beirachta Elohim Umelech. That Beirachta, remember, is a euphemism for cursing God, because we don't even want to say that. So, but that's what they're accusing him with, and we know that from last week, what happens. V'hotzi'uhu v'sikluhu v'yamut. And then he should be taken out and killed by stoning. V'yasu anshe iro hazakenim v'hachorim asher yoshvim b'iro kasher shochal le'em izebel. She decides it should be done, and it's done. Kasher katab b'tzrim asher shochal le'em. They follow the instructions that she sent them. Oh, tzom, they called a fast day. Hoshivu et navot b'rosh ha'am. They put navot at the head of the town. V'yavo shnei anashim b'nei b'lial. And these two lowlifes come along. V'yashvu negdo, and they sit against him, by iduhu anshe Belial et Navot neged Ha'am, and these two people get up and they give false witness against Navot. Lemar borech Navot Elohim umelech. Navot has cursed God and King. Vayotzihu michutz la'ir vayisakluhu ba'avanim vayamot, and they indeed put him to death. Vayishlachu Elizevel lemar, and so then they send back a message to Izevel saying, Sukal Navot vayamot, he is dead. Vayikishmo Izevel ki sukal Navot, and when Izevel hears that Navot is dead, vayamat, that he dead, vayitomer Izevel al Achav, so then she turns to Achav and she says to him, Kum, reisha takerem Navot Yisraeli asher me'ein latet lecha bekesef, ki ein Navot chai ki meit. Get up, go take the field, because Navot is no longer alive. Vayikishmo Achav ki meit Navot, and Achav comes along and says Navot is dead. Hears that Navot is dead. Vayakam Achav laredet al kerem Navot haYisraeli liishto. He goes down in order to inherit the vineyard. Vayhi dvar Hashem el Eliyahu hatishbi lemar. And then Hashem shows up to, appears to Eliyahu and tells him, Kum reid likrat Achav melech Yisrael asher b'shamron. You go down and find Achav. Hinei b'kerem Navot asher yarad sham liishto. You'll find him in Navot's vineyard that he has come to inherit. Vidibarta elav lemor, and this is what you should say to him. Ko amar Hashem, so says God, haratzachta vigam yarashta, which is an important, which is a Hebrew bitoy, which means what? It's not enough that you've killed him, but you're also inheriting his land. Vidibarta elav, and this is what you should say to him. Ko amar Hashem, b'mkom asher lekaku haklavim et dam Navot, because the dogs licked the blood of Navot, yilaklu haklavim et damcha gam ata. You two are going to get back what you dished out. Vayoma Achav El Eliyahu, Hamitzatani Oivai. You here, like, what are you doing here? My enemy. Vayoma Matzati Yan Hitmakercha Lasot Hera Beine Hashem. And Eliyahu says, no, you are the evil one. You are the one who are doing Ra Beine Hashem. Hinene Mevi Alecha Ra'a Ubiarta Charecha Vikarti Lachav Mashtin Bekir Vasu. And Eliyahu tells him, not only that, but all of the males in your family are going to be killed out. And then we have a whole list of curses that's going to happen to Achav and to all of his household. And then finally, and know that God is going to destroy you like he destroyed all those other people who went against his word. And now Pasuk Gimel. And also to Izebel, Diber Hashem, Hashem says, Lemor, Haklavim yolchu et Izebel bechel Yisrael. The dogs are going to also eat up Izebel in the Wadi of Israel. Hamet la'achav be'ir, and if Achav dies in the city, and then he goes on to describe what is going to happen to him, then the klavim will eat him in the city. Vamet b'saden, if he dies out in the field, then the Ov Hashamayim. Rak lo ayak Achav asher makel asotara b'nei Hashem, Asher hesata oto Izebel ishto. Because there was no king who was as bad in the eyes of God, and here the pasuk very clearly blames Izebel. Asher hesata oto Izebel ishto. She is the one who made him bad. Vayitaev mod lelechat acharehad lululim, and then they worshipped idols. Okay. So we understand here, we have a number of issues that we need to discuss about this chapter. So the first question I have to you is, if Achav is king and he wants the field, why doesn't he just take it?
It appears that he's still, sometimes an ethical person, and even when he relays, and he's, why does he go to bed? Maybe because the inheritance of my father's, maybe that struck him really hard.
Okay, so there are a number of issues here. So you actually hit on two issues. The first issue is, why doesn't he just take it? The second issue is, why doesn't Navot give it to him? Mm-hmm. So the first issue of why he doesn't take it. So first of all, you'll notice in the very first pasuk of the Perek tells us that where is the vineyard? It doesn't say that, be careful. Where is Achav's castle? In Shomron. Where is the Kerem? It does say, Kerem haya l'nevot Yisraeli asher b'Yisrael. Which is in a different area. So that's what the Malbim tells us in source number 8. In source number 8, and it starts at the bottom of page 2, but continues on the back, the Malbim tells us, Lama kafa, why does the Pasuk say, L'navot ha-Yisraeli asher b'Yisrael, Loma, Lama doyet likrato b'shem melech Shomron. And why does it say that he's the king in Shomron? Bichlala sipur yipalei lama lo lakach achav et hakerem miyado biyad chazaka. Because one of the major questions of our story is, why doesn't he just take the vineyard? Chazak mishpatei hamlucha. That's what kings do. Kamo shamu et karmechem yikach v'natan avadav v'chol shechen la'atzmo. So therefore he says that the kramim actually do not, it's not located next to his palace, but it's probably some sort of summer house. It's a summer palace, that's right, somewhere farther away. But let's talk about that. Even so, why doesn't Navot give the Kerem to Eliyahu? Now look carefully at Navot's answer to Achav. He asks three reasons, he says. Let's look at the pasuk carefully. Right? In Pasuk Gimel, Vayomer Navot El Achav, Chalila li me Hashem. So first of all, he's involving God. Right? God forbid that I should do this. Miteti et nachlat avotai, because this is my father's inheritance. And the last thing he says is, Lecha, to you. Right. So he gives him three reasons why he can't give him the field. Something has to do with God. Something has to do with his father's inheritance. And finally, I'm especially not giving it to you. So first of all, let's look in, why do you think he won't give the vineyard to... What does Navot think that Achav is going to do with the field? But that's not enough. It's more than he wants. That's right. He wants to turn it into avodah zarah. And if you look in source number nine is a pasuk in Yeshayahu, where Yeshayahu says, "A people that provoke me to my face continually, that sacrifice in gardens." Zovchim baganot, so that he knows that it's going to be used for idol worship. That's why he brings in God, and that perhaps could be why he doesn't want to give it over. Now let's just talk about the Nacha, the Avotai. Look in source number 12. Source number 12 is the Pasuk in Vayikra that tells us the land really doesn't belong to us. The land really belongs to Hashem. And that even if you do sell it, we know that on Yovel it already comes back, because of this idea that it belongs to the families. So v'ha'aretz lo timkar, you should not sell the land. Litzmitut ki li ha'aretz ki geirim v'toshvim atem imadi. So we already have this biblical concept of you don't sell land. You don't sell land in order to be used for idol worship. And it seems to be that Navot also has an issue with Achav himself. And I'm certainly not going to sell it to you. But now look at something interesting. When Achav comes home, he repeats to himself in his mind what Navot says, and he leaves, he only brings up two objections. Pasuk Dalet. What two does he bring up in Dalet? Vayomer lo atein lecha et nachalat avotai. So he brings up two. Now look even further. When he repeats the story again to Izebel, what does he mention at all? In Pasuk Vav. Vayomer lo atein lecha et karmi. He's already left out those other arguments. Now, how does that happen? That Navot presents three arguments. He comes home, he remembers two, and by the time he repeats it to Izebel, all he does is remember one.
No, but he's manipulating his reality in order to get her to
correct. So first of all,
I think he's in tremendous denial psychologically. This guy, he's really wrecked the guilt here, big time. He's taken to bed. I mean, the man is greatly depressed. Probably because something's hit his soul here.
But also, that's what he's taking it. We see that what has he become obsessed with? He's become obsessed with this to you, personally. Right. We see that he's taking it very personally. And whether he's manipulating Izebel or not, I think is an important question. Had Izebel heard Navot's three arguments, would she have reacted differently?
No, I don't think so.
I don't know, but I think it's a question that's worthwhile asking, that all she knows, based on what Achav told her, is this is a
personal
issue. And that, she says, we can't, you're a king. Had she said maybe it's the father's, it's inheritance, God, maybe she would have reacted differently, but it's an important point to show that he does not provide her with all the information that he has. Now, yes, yes, we are, that's right. We question very much, that's correct. We question very much Achav's reaction here. But at the flip side of it, I think it's very important to point out, and all of you have seen enough movies and read enough books about ancient times. If you say no to the king,
you're in trouble.
The king,
and
the
Navot was related.
He is related. I'll show you that in a minute, but I don't think it changes the story. One second. I just want you to see here something fascinating about the kingdom of Israel. That even in ancient times, even when Izebel, why doesn't Izebel just kill him? Izebel creates this whole, put him at the head of the thing, bring false witnesses. Why does she need to do that? Because even in ancient Israel, there was law, and there's basic rights of the individual, and you can't just come along and do whatever you want. And this story is amazing in that it shows us that therefore the individual does have a ability and does have a say and does have rights. Now I do want to remind you that if you look in source number 13, when the Jews came to Shmuel and asked Shmuel, we want a king, Shmuel says to him, oh no, you don't want a king. You don't want a king. Because Ata Shema Bekolam, and then Hashem, Yoki, Ach Ki Heita Id Behem, Hashem says, tell Shmuel what's going to happen. V'igat lehem mishpat ha-melech shem yimloch aleihem. Tell the people what's going to happen if you have a king. Source 13. Vayomer Shmuel, et kol devar Hashem el ha'am ha-sho'alim me'ito melech. Vayomer, zeh yeh mishpat ha-melech. This is what the king is going to do. Hashem yimloch aleihem. Et b'nechem yikach. He's going to take your sons. V'sham lo b'merkav to parashav ratzu lefnei merkav to. He's going to make your children into slaves. V'lasum lo sarei alafim v'sarei chamishim lachrosh charisho l'kzor kitzro l'asot kolem lachto v'klei rechbo. And he's going to take your sons and make them into servants, and they're going to work in the fields, and they're going to have to be soldiers. V'et b'notechem yikach l'rikachot, and he's going to take the daughters to be embroiderers. V'letabachot u'lefot, and to be, you know, bakers. V'et sodotechem v'et karmel. And he's going to take your vineyards. So now, based on this prophecy of Shmuel, it makes our question even stronger. Shmuel already prophesied that the kings are going to come along and do whatever they want. So again, we come back to our question, why doesn't Achav just take the vineyard? Right, so then why doesn't he just take it?
Okay.
So first of all, there are a number of answers here given by the commentators. Answer number one is, the kingdom of the kings in the northern kingdom, how did they become, what kind of kings are they? How did Ahab's father become king? No. That's quite, he knocked off the guy ahead of him. Right. As opposed to Malchut Yehuda, which are God appointed, son ben son, these kings are who's, you know, the strongest. So that it could be that this law of taking the land, you know, taking what you want, only belongs to Malchut Yehuda. Now it could also be, one second, it could also be that we also know this, even think about it, even in America today, there is a point where the government can take your land. At what point can the government take your land? Pardon? Besides that, if they want to build, that's right, if they need to build the highway, and the highway goes through your land, they can appropriate your land. Based on what, though? The idea is that the Sibur, the benefits come down to the Prat. And at that point, the government can force you to sell. So here to now, why? So that could be the same thing. The king is allowed to take it when it's for the benefit of the people rather than the individual. And here it specifically told us that he wants it for his individual needs. So that can explain why he feels he needs to go through. No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. There is still here an idea that, that you definitely inherit that which comes through your family, and there is still a significance to that which you, which is inherited.
Abigail told us that since Ahab didn't inherit the kingship, he doesn't respect the laws of inheritance.
Okay.
And in addition, the basic morality that people
Yafemaod. And that, right, and that takes us to the next point, that these rules don't necessarily apply to Ahab, but why does Izebel feel the need to create this whole fictional, because she realizes that there has to be, the people need to see that there is a certain, and which by the way shows us that even though she comes from outside the society, she has very quickly learned A, the rules of society, and B, what needs to be done in order not to alienate the people of the community.
So if he had relayed the story properly to her, she may have been a little...
That's what I'm saying. Perhaps
she may have been a delayed reaction. She may have taken a totally different approach.
A different approach.
She didn't realize you're dealing with God,
which is something...
We're
going to come to a different question about Ahav's responsibility in a minute. But let me talk about... So we understand why Navot hesitates to give over his land. But at the same time, if you look at source number 14, in source number 14, the Medrash here tells us that Navot was actually not very smart. And we know this, so when somebody comes to you and says your money or your life, you're supposed to give your money. Sometimes it pays to be smart rather than to be right. Okay? And so here, if you look at the Medrash says, it talks about Lot. When the Malachim told Lot, we have to go out, and it says in the Pasuk, Vayit Mahama, that he delayed. And then, so Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi said, Zelot. Rabbi Shmuel ben Nachman Amar, Zekorach. Rabbi Yehuda ben Simon Omer, Zenavot. So that you see, Navot is being put into that category of people who like their money a little bit too much. And therefore, he should not have risked his life to get this property. Now, let's go back to that question you raised. It's clear that who was the brains behind this whole program? Izeb. He seems Ahav completely incompetent. He doesn't know, has no idea how to even deal with this. And she says she's going to take control of it. Ahav is apparently guilty. We know Ahav is guilty because the Navi comes along and says, you're dead. Why is Ahav guilty? So you wanted to suggest already once that Ahav is guilty and that because he didn't present all the arguments to Izebel, so therefore she doesn't have the full picture and therefore she makes the decision. That's one answer. Why else do you think Ahav is guilty?
Why allowed himself to be manipulated by
He allows himself to be manipulated to the extent when she comes to him and says to him, I'll get the field. Or the field has been gotten, he doesn't say to her, how, what happened, you know, and
she's in control, she's really bad.
I don't know, but what I do think here about Ahav is that, and this is I think another one of the things that we realize about this chapter, is not knowing or claiming that you don't know does not take away your innocence, especially when you're the king. Right? Saying I don't know, I didn't know about it, that doesn't excuse you at all. And in addition, remember the letters are being signed with his signet ring.
You almost see it as a Hashverosh, as that stupid.
Wait, let me say this, you know what's going on. Just to go back a little, could he have said, listen, you can have this land, just don't build any Asherah trees on it or something? Like, could he have just said, I have one condition, please don't use this land for a vote of Zorah?
Right. We don't know. So the part of the story, there was some sort of negotiations with it. There could have been negotiations. That we don't sort of know. But we do know that he is guilty to the extent that if you look at back in the Rambam, in source 11a, this also might be a little bit backwards, but I think we get the point here as well. The Rambam in Hilchot Gzeilah tells us that ta'ava, when you desire something, then it brings you to really... A bad place, and that brings you to stealing. Because if the people don't want to sell it, even if you pressure them, then what's it going to bring you to? To steal. And if they decide to save their money to prevent you from stealing it, then what could that bring you to? To murder. And the Rambam says, Tzeil mad mimasa achav vinavot. He says, and the story should show you that you want something and then you don't stop yourself, and then the next thing you know is it could bring you to actual murder. Okay, now let's go back to Izebel's plan. Why specifically does she dream up this plan? Why doesn't she accuse him of Chilul Shabbos? Why specifically does she accuse him of blasphemy? So is Mechalel Shabbat.
But probably she could get two witnesses who were willing to say that, and maybe
the community is still God fearing to a certain extent. So
the community is 100% God fearing.
Last week about blasphemy coming from a goy and not from within Israel, and she was not from within Israel.
Okay, which as I say again, I pointed out to you, which again I think is fascinating, how much she knows the rules. But what's important here is that when you sin against God in this situation, and you sin against the king, if you're Mechalel Shabbos and you get put to death, what happens to your inheritance? What happens to your property? It goes to your heirs. Here it goes to the king. So that, again, this is, again, her knowledge of the rules in order for her to inherit the land. And as a matter of fact, though, if you look here in verse Chaf Vav, you'll see something else as well. No, it's not in this chapter. There is another pasuk later on where it actually tells us there's another pasuk that tells us that he actually killed Navot and Navot's sons.
Sanhedrin
number 10 actually brings us to a different point, which is one you mentioned earlier, which is also fascinating. Haya bekerem Navot asher yorad sham rishto amar lehen ben achi aviv Haya. According to the Gemara, Navot was Ahav's nephew. Now, Ben Achi Aviv. Now, how does that change our understanding of the story? It makes it almost worse. You know, it's one thing if you knock off a stranger, but to knock off your own nephew because you want his land.
That's why he calls him Lecha, not a very Mechubad word.
No, not at all. And it could be also maybe that's why Nevot feels that he can speak that way to him, because it is his uncle. So that actually changed it.
Why would he say that it's part of his nachalah?
Yafeh. So the Gemara says the idea by killing, when he kills Navot and Navot's sons, he becomes the next in line to inherit. He inherits not because he's king, but he inherits because he is the next in line in terms of inheritance. I don't know what I say. I really don't think it makes the story any worse in this situation. But let me ask another question, though. When Izevel writes this letter to the community heads, why are they willing to listen?
Fear.
First of all, it could be fear. Again, it shows her power, which extends to all kinds of places. So that's possibility number one. Possibility number two is just the way the Nevi'ei HaBaal were on her payroll. It's very possible just that the mayors of the city were also on her payroll, something that we are...
Maybe Nevot had already had this reputation of being a little money...
Or hungry, or says things.
Yeah,
says
yeah.
things that not yeah. necessarily on our idea. So she goes ahead and is able to get away with this court case, but she, again, we're going to point out that she does feel a need to set it up so that there is not a revolt by the people. And we come back to realizing that when Eliyahu comes along, he comes along and says that she too is guilty. We are now going to skip ahead to source number 5. Source number 5, you'll notice, is a number of chapters later. Brings us to Melachim Perek Bet, Perek Tet. Now, what's already happening there is the revolt of Yehu ben Nimshi. Yehu ben Nimshi is appointed by the Navi Elisha, and his job is to basically wipe out the house of Ahav. Ahav is already dead. He's been killed. The prophecy is fulfilled. The dogs lick his blood. His two sons rule after him. And Yehu comes, kills them, and brings us to the queen mother, who is still alive. And she appears in Melachim Bet Perek Tet. So Yehu has been murdering all of the house of Ahav. Ubishnat Achat Esrei Shana LiYoram Ben Ahav. It was in the 11th year of Yoram, the son of Ahav, Melech Achaziyahu Al Yehuda. We'll get to that next week. Vayavo Yehu Yisraela. He comes to Emek Yisrael. The Izevel Shama. Now Izevel hears that he's coming. Vatasem Bapuch Eineha. She puts makeup on her eyes. Vatitav et Rosha. She does up her hair. Vatishkov Ba'ara Chalon. And she puts herself in the window. The Yehu Babashar. And Yehu comes in through the gate. Vatomer. And she calls from the window. Hashalom Zimri Horeg Adonav? Are Zimri, the man who killed his master, okay? Vayisa Panav El Chalon, and Yehu looks up to the window, Vayomer, Mi Iti. He says, you know, who's with me? Mi Iti, Umi, Vayashkifu Allah Shnaim Shloshas Rasim. So two or three of his, you know, men say, we're here. Vayomer, Shimituha. He says, go up there and push her out of the window. Vayishmi tuhu, and they go up and they push her out of the window. Viziv nidama al hakir velasusim vayir misena. And her blood, you know, spritches onto the wall and she gets trampled by horses. Vayavo vayochal vayesh, and Yehu and his men sit down and they eat and they drink. Vayomer, And Yehu says, Pik du na et ha'arurah zot v'kibruha ki bat melechi. He says, you know what? Go bury her, because no matter what we say about this cursed one, she is the daughter of a king. Vayelchu, 1 second, we'll come to that. Vayelchu likbara, so they go to bury her. Velo matzuba ki im ha'gilgolet v'haraglayim v'akapot yadayim. They go to bury her, and all they find is her skull, her palms, and her feet. Vayashuv vaygidulo, and they come back to Yehu, and they say, we can't really bury her because nothing's left. Vayomer, and Yehu says, Devar Hashem hu asher diber biyad abdo Eliyahu HaTishbi. This is a fulfillment of the prophecy that had been given to Eliyahu HaTishbi, lemar, bechelik Yisrael yochlu aklavim et basar Izebel, that Izebel's flesh would be eaten by the dogs in Izebel. Vayad nevilat Izebel kedomem al pnei hasadeh b'chelik Yisrael asher lo yomru zot Izebel. And they weren't even able to bury her. There's no place that they could bury her, so anybody could ever say, oh look, there is Izebel. Now, let's go back to the very beginning of the story and start with the makeup. Why does she do her makeup and her hair when she hears that Yehu, who has killed her son and her grandsons, why does she put on makeup? So she wants to die, she knows she's going to die, and...
She wants to
try to... That's great. Well, that's let's go. Let's do one answer at a time. Answer number one is actually something we know from history. When they were going to take Mary, Queen of Scots, out to be beheaded, and they asked her, "What's her last request? What did she ask for? A comb." She also asked for a comb because she wanted to do hair. You know, if I'm going to die, at least let me be beautiful. That's right. We see it's an attempt to. It's a certain amount to retain dignity even when you know you're going to die. That is one answer, which we actually see in the Ralbag. And that is, we see here in, I think I brought it for you.
מהתוכנית של אלוהים, כי בסופו של דבר רואים רק את הגולגולת, לא רואים את השיער, לא רואים את הפנים.
Playing on what actually happens to her. But let's go back to the second answer that you gave. The second answer you gave, so it's going to be, the second, do you think, we'll talk about that in 1 second, I'll talk about that 1 minute. Let's go. Second opinion here was given is she trying to seduce him in order to save her life? So she tries to make herself beautiful in order for him to say, well, I'm not going to kill this woman, I will incorporate her into my household. You don't like that. Go ahead. She is an old woman by now. Right, so what? You think she'd rather be dead? You think it would be lowering herself? Okay, so this is actually Rashi actually goes with this interpretation. Rashi actually goes with the interpretation that she is hoping that he would marry her. Now, even though I think that you're right, if he's killing, if Ahav's family is being killed out, even her sons are being killed and her grandsons, in her mind, who should really be ruling? She should. And then when she calls him Zimri, his name isn't Zimri, his name is Yehu, and she knows it. Who is Zimri, and why does she mention him? Zimri is the father of Ahav. Zimri is actually one before the father of Ahav. How did Zimri become king? Zimri became king. He killed the king before him, and then Zimri was killed by Omri, who is the father of Ahav. So that when she refers to him as Zimri, what is she saying to him?
In order to get your kingship, you killed.
So is she insulting him or is she flattering him? Again, Zimri became king by killing. Yehu is now going to become king by
killing.
killing. So she refers to him as Zimri. Is she flattering him or is she insulting him? How do you understand that?
It shows that he has power and she loves power.
That's what she could be saying. She could be saying, look, Zimri became king that way, no hard feelings. You were becoming king, no hard feelings. I understand that that's power, and she could be, that's right, she could be flattering him, and that would go together with the idea of trying to seduce him, and she's saying, hey, we're cool. That could be one way. The other way you could read it, though, is she's saying to him, Zimri became king, somebody rebelled against him. You are becoming king now by murdering, somebody's going to come along and get rid of you too. You know, so don't be so impressed with yourself, and that could be her trying to maintain her dignity by putting him into his place. So you see, I really think that either of these interpretations are okay, and based on what we know about her, you're going to have to sort of choose which one you think fits in more with the definition that we have. Now he decides to come along and push her out the window. Now, first of all, just an interesting thing which I learned, that there's actually something, it's called defenestration. Defenestration is actually the act of throwing somebody out of a window. It was coined in 1618 in a story in Prague, but that actually becomes a form. But somebody also just told me recently that how do you say window in Yiddish? And in Yiddish, it's fenster. So it's very interesting that defenestration is throwing out of a window. That's an interesting, you know, those of you interested in language. But so you see here now, as much as defenestration. But for those of us who are talking about her dignity, we could certainly say that being thrown out of the window and trampled by the horses is certainly not a very dignified way of dying. Right. So that's an interesting way of understanding this. By the fact that he gets rid of her in such a disrespectful kind of way could again indicate that he was offended by her presentation and therefore reacts the way she does. Or he's just, remember, God has commanded him to get rid of Achav. So he's just got to get rid of her, and this is the easiest way.
The name Zimri doesn't relate back to, the fact that she was like a, back when Zimri was supposed to be,
I don't think it comes back that far, no. I don't think it has any relationship to that. But now, let's see, but what indeed happens to her? He sits down, Yehu sits down to eat and drink at this point in time, indicating to us that doesn't even bother. Right? He doesn't care, right. It doesn't even bother him at all that he has gotten rid of her. And that, you know, he's even celebrating her thing. But then he sort of has a change of heart. And he decides that, you know what, this woman actually deserves a burial. Now, why does she deserve a burial? This is actually fascinating. Because he says not because she's the wife of the king. Notice that. He specifically says to her because she's the daughter of the king. Now, I think that that shows a certain amount of, like, is this he saying she doesn't deserve respect for who she is? She's lost, you know, all of her humanity. But from her father, she deserves a certain amount of respect. And he goes to bury her, and what does he find? He finds only the hands and palms and skull. It's a very well-known midrash that why were these parts of her body spared? Because when she heard a wedding party come by her house, she would come out on her porch and she would clap her hands and tap her feet and sing along. And in that zechut of that mitzvah of hachnasat kala, those parts of her body that she used to be misameach, those parts of the body were not eaten by the dogs. Which actually shows us this idea that even if you can be a evil, terrible woman, but if you no good deed goes unrewarded. No bad deed goes unpunished, but no good deed goes unrewarded. I'll tell you why. And I think that brings us sort of to our end of our discussion. That here in the discussion today, we are describing Izebel as an evil, manipulative, strong woman. But yet at the same time, I think that there's another aspect that we have to look at. And I think that's what the Darshan is trying to tell us, that she could not have been all bad. Because if she was all bad, then the people would not have accepted her. And she is accepted. Ahav had other wives as well. But she is the one who becomes the reigning queen. And nobody seems to, it doesn't seem to bother anybody.
She has some charisma.
So I think she must have had charisma. I think she must have, she was a smart woman, we said. And she knows that she needs the people on her side. And she did things in order to keep the people liking her.
Is that why she's referred to as a witch, maybe?
Oh, so why is she referred to as a witch? She is referred to as a witch when Yehu, I didn't show it to you, did I even bring it to you? When Yehu is actually coming to kill her son, he says to the son, yes, look in source 5. I skipped it. If you look in source 5, before we went to the bottom, Vayikarot Yoram et Yehu, when Yoram, the son of Ahav, sees Yehu ben Nimshi, he says to him, Hashalom Yehu? Is everything okay, Yehu? Vayomer, and Yehu says to him, Ma Hashalom ad Zizunei Izebel imecha v'kishafeha harabim. How can there be peace as long as there is harlotry and witchcraft introduced by your mother? Okay, so we don't have it associated with Izebel per se, but Jehoram says, Yehu, you know, your mother.
It must have been, that explains why maybe she was standing at the window also. She must have been, even in her old age, extraordinarily captivating.
Right.
I think
that that's true. That sometimes we have to not lose, and we'll end with that. Let's sort of try to see if we can get a whole picture of Izebel. And first of all, we know, and it's very clear, that she is the evil behind Ahav. That she is the one who influences him to do evil. We saw it very clearly open in the Psukim, that she appears to be the one who brought the Baal into Am Yisrael. She is the one who supported the Nevi'im. She is the one who wants to get rid of any opposition, be it Eliyahu, be it... She is the nemesis of Eliyahu. Eliyahu feels the need to run away from her, which shows her power. She is the one with the plan. It seems to be that she is not afraid of anyone, and everybody else seems to be afraid of her. The fact that she is able to tell the people what to do, and they all go ahead and do it. So that's all we have on one hand. But at the same time, I think it is important to say that we do see a clever woman. A woman who is not, if you're completely evil, then you won't have the community behind her. That she has the nation behind her. She thinks even as Yehu was coming to his family, she still thinks that perhaps she can manipulate the situation to her benefit. And next week, Be'ezrat Hashem, we'll look at her daughter and see where that takes us.